It's 2 o'clock. Well, sorry, it's 10 a.m. in Nigeria. I would like to welcome everybody here. Thank you so much for coming on the webinar today. My name is Cornelius Adewale. I work with Washington State University. I'm also the founder of Famwella SPC, a social purpose corporation based in the United States, but with focus first in Nigeria on how do we really empower the next generation of African agricultural entrepreneurs. One of our plans is to be able to develop a platform for mentorship in terms of bringing across information that is needed to equip the next generation of agricultural entrepreneurs in Africa. But before we go into our conversation today, I really want to recognize the presence of one of my fathers in Nigeria. That's Professor Kukuola, who is the Vice Chancellor of Osun State University. It is unflinching support for what we're doing, and to the extent of him being present almost in all our webinars now, it means so much to us. And I really want to appreciate your mentorship, sir, and your commitment to human development in Nigeria. So before we start, I would love to bring in Prof, maybe to give us a kind of a welcome and a remark, and also the role that Osun State University is playing on this effort on how do we equip the next generation of agricultural entrepreneurs all across the country. You're welcome, sir.
Gentlemen and ladies, very good morning, and it's a pleasure always to be with you on this very important and interesting webinar. We all have a duty to ensure that we empower the next generation and even the current generation. We all need to be empowered. And this is one of the low-hanging fruits that we can explore to make this happen. So, like I have admonished in the previous webinars, let's take this thing very seriously. Let's concentrate on it and let's make the best use of it. You don't have these opportunities always. It's important for me to also appreciate Cornelius, your patriotism. It's uncommon. Using your own resources, the opportunities available to you to empower citizens thousands of miles away. I want to pray that the Almighty God will continue to bless you and empower you too. So once again, I welcome all of you to this very important event. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate that.
Morning, sir.
Yeah. I would like to give a very brief welcome of the members of the panel. We have so much ground to cover today. There are so many questions, but I want to give like a brief overview of why are we discussing this topic, and also maybe just a brief introduction. I'll still welcome my guests to be able to maybe give more information about themselves when I call them in for conversation. But we have with us today Mr. Ibrahim Mangari Hamadu, is a co-founder of Livestock 247.com, which is one of the first online, actually the first online livestock platform in Nigeria. And has been judged also as one of the most innovative startups in Africa. The Popular Business Day in Nigeria regard Mr. Ibrahim has that as somebody that every Nigerian alive today really need to pay close attention to. I had opportunity to listen to Mr. Ibrahim when I was in Nigeria sometimes last year. I was really motivated by and inspired by his commitment and all he has done in agricultural space. And I'm sure that we have opportunity to learn from his experience today and from his knowledge on the very important topic of profitable agribusiness that we'll be having today. I also have on the panel Ms. Juliet Indianeko, who is the founder of Hera Enterprise, an organization with a focus on processing and packaging of odorless fufu and as well as vitamin A garri. She's also the co-founder of AgroMentor, an online platform that connects young agri-food entrepreneurs with experts for the purpose of mentorship. I'm super excited about learning from these members of the panel. And I hope also that everyone here today also are excited to do the same. But before I maybe even provide a little bit background on the topic, I want to be able to address our attendees. I could see that more people are coming on board. There is a chat box through which you can ask questions and make a, if you have a comment. I really want today's discussion to be very engaging. When you have questions, please, you can type it in the chat box. We can bring it up to the members of panel or whether it's even directed to anyone. I could also see that a number of people here are raising their hands. If you have something specific to say, please just put it in the chat box. That will help whereby I could now maybe unmute you so that you could maybe either to bring you for conversation or not. So while we're discussing the idea of profitable agribusiness, we consider it's a very important topic because if we want to bring in a number of youth into agriculture, we need to change the picture, the current image that agriculture have in the mind of the people. From my childhood, growing up in Nigeria, and even interacting with a lot of people, even here in the US and even in other countries that I've been to, there is this image that people have about agriculture in Africa. It's an image of, somebody old, working with cutlass and hoe, and not necessarily as something that is cool or something that is a profitable thing to venture into. But we know that this is not really the case when it's come to agribusiness. So, and there are things to learn in order to actually take it as a business and in order to organize it in a way that will be profitable. So if we want to achieve that idea, there is need to bring information, to bring tools, to bring support system that actually help people to have a better view of what an agribusiness is, how to go about it, and how to learn from people that have actually been there before. So, which is one of the reasons why we are discussing this. Today, I hope we're able to go into details of what are the factors that you really need to put into consideration before you start that agribusiness idea, or maybe even an existing agribusiness idea that you already have. How can you put in place innovative ideas to make it more profitable for you as a whole? So, I'm first going to bring in Mr. Ibrahim on for my first question. You could talk a little bit more about yourself as well, maybe before even you answer this question, which is the question of this idea of agribusiness in general. So more often than not, when we mention agribusiness, it's this idea of one old man or woman growing maize and cassava. From your own perspective and from your own experience, is this what agribusiness is all about?
Well, thank you, colonels. And first of all, let me appreciate the invitation and the honor done to me personally to be on the same platform with our mentor, the Prof. And I am here to also learn. And because when you stop learning, you start dying. So we're all learning. We learn every day. And I, like you rightly said, co-founded Livestock 247. And my passion is in building tech platforms, especially in the agri space. Livestock 247 happens to be one of them. And we thank God for the success and the recognition. The kind words that you mentioned, Mr. Adewale. But one thing that I always want to give my colleagues in this journey of knowledge, seeking knowledge, is that let us all aspire to make our today better than our yesterday and make our tomorrow and hope that our tomorrow will be better than our today. And we should also realize that we're given so much opportunities. The world today is going through so much interesting faces that the generations of the old were not opportune to. So we have a lot of tools to make things easier for us. And as Africans, and we should look inwards, the future, the past in Africa, and we hope the future should be in Africa. And Agric is that bridge, whether we like it or not, connect with our rural areas and with our urban areas, and then to lift the mass of our people out of poverty and to really open up the continent, because we have arable lands from Casablanca to Cape Town and across the continent. So it's an opportunity that we all have to take advantage of, and the opportunity of technology is there, the opportunity of knowledge, the opportunity of mentors like the Paul that are inspiring our young ones to really look deep into, and people like you, colonies that are doing wonderful things globally. And you are also an inspiration to your generation and of what you've achieved. So back to your question, of course, it's not the same. It's not so. Like you rightly said, most people think when you mention agri, that image of an old man in the village trying to make ends meet, of course, it's totally wrong, especially in this day and age. And I always want to give our own Dr. Akinwumi Adesina of the African Development Bank described some time ago in one of his famous quotes. He said, by the year 2030, the size of the food and the agribusiness in Africa will reach about $1 trillion USD, United States dollars. And that's something that I think it's massive. So if you're thinking of how to make money, that's the sector to be in. So the term agribusiness was first used by, like we all know, John Davis at the Harvard University in the 50s, at around 1955. But by the 80s, it was given about three different connotations. One of such is like it's synonymous with agriculture, it's synonymous with agricultural economies. It's a modified concept of agriculture, excluding farming or off-farm. But at present, I have to tell you that agribusiness is defined as, it's seen, and we know it as all business enterprise or that sells to farmers, to traders, to consumers, with transactions that involve either on inputs or produce or service. And it encompasses items such as productive resources like feed, seed, fertilizer, equipment, energy, pesticides, machinery. It could be agricultural commodities, raw and processed. You know, it could be facilitated services like trading, finance, insurance, marketing, storage, processing, transportation, just name it. Packing, distribution, consultancy, soil testing, GIS services, I mean, geographical information services, tech platforms. And so today, this is what agribusiness means. So it's not that image of that old man in the village with the hoe. It's a complete 360 degrees ecosystem. And at each particular interplay, there are profitable ways, there are profitable interplays that one could endeavor to go into. So I think it's a very wrong assumption. And I think the present generation is beginning to realize that. And with efforts like this, with the webinars like this, we are democratizing information. We are making it much more interesting. Like you rightly said, we have to make it appealing to the younger generation. It has to be what I normally say, it has to be sexy. We have to make agriculture sexy. So, that's my answer to your question, Colonels, and I hope I'm giving you the perspective properly.
Thank you so much, Ibrahim. I really, really, really appreciate that. Thank you for giving an in-depth explanation of what agribusiness encompasses. Thank you for that. I want to bring in Juliet in, maybe stay on this same idea. Other than growing crops and having high yield, which is the first thing I see people mention when we talk about, okay, let's develop agriculture. Say, okay, oh, let's do it so that we have high yield. Let's grow crops. But other than this area, how can an individual create, deliver, and capture more value in a profitable way within the agricultural value chain? At least from your experience, from what you've done, from all of that, what are these other areas in which we can actually create value within the hack space?
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Colinius, for the opportunity to be here. I do not take this for granted, and I'm really super excited to be here. Yeah, so let me just delve straight to answering that question. So aside having high yield and growing crops and rearing animals on any scale, I strongly believe that value addition in the terms of processing is something that we really need to, is something that captures value the most. Now look at it, when you want to sell, at least let's look at Nigeria as a case, let's take Nigeria as a case study. If, for example, you harvest mangoes and you just put them along the streets and sell for sale, and when you process that mango into mango juice, which of them commands higher value? It is just obvious that the mango juice is going to command higher value compared to the mango fruit itself. So basically for me, I think value addition, now when I say value addition, I mean processing. Processing and packaging actually gives your product higher, It gives it higher value in the marketplace. And that's where, that's something that we really need to look at. So most times when I see people who say, okay, I want to go into primary production, in my head, I'm always like, we have a lot of people who are already into primary production. So why don't you just add value to this thing? Why don't you add value to them? Because I believe it's in the place of adding value that you get much more profit. Now, aside that, I also try to look at something like packaging food to supply directly to families. There is a model that I know works. For example, there's this particular farm, Gatman Calloway, at Lekki. What they do is they kind of have this this herb farm where they harvest, people come in to buy from them, so they harvest and they sell directly to people. Those kind of models work because it goes directly from the farmer to the end user. It kind of eliminates the middleman somehow, and that makes it really profitable. So if we look at following that kind of model,
I think there is internet connectivity issues there. I hope that maybe Juliet is able to join back and maybe give a little bit, expand more into that. I would love to bring Ibrahim back on this. You see, when it comes to, like, somebody just had a question on the panel, asking Ms. Toluani Ogunbiyi specifically, asking a question on, is agribusiness the same as agripreneurship? And I think the center part of that question is the idea of entrepreneurship, which I think it is a critical component. I want to be able to link that to this next question I want to bring to you, Ibrahim. When we look at entrepreneurship, startups, there are processes to follow. And there are things that you really want to put in place if you want your startup to be successful. And one of these is this idea of a lean startup idea, this idea of having an innovative business models that is very important. So what do you think, what is that difference between business planning in the traditional sense and business model canvas? And if there is, what is the difference? And I also want to see, maybe you could maybe expatiate a little bit more from your own understanding of the business model canvas that is important for an entrepreneur to put into place if they want to design a very profitable agribusiness.
Okay, like we all know, when you fail to plan, they say you plan to fail. And to answer the question regarding the difference between agribusiness and agripreneurship, I think it's just a matter of semantics. And entrepreneurship is basically about taking risks, And when you add that to aggregate, it's just, I mean, applying the same principles that we do implement when you're starting any business in the agric sector, and that is what makes it agri-premiership. But back to your question regarding business model canvas and the components and how critical it is, I think it's very important for a business, any business person, whether you're in agri or you're in tech or you're in whatever you're doing, if you expect to maximize your investment, you need to make some strategic decisions. And the business model canvas happens to be one of those strategic management tools that I think around 2004, 2005, Dr. Alexander Osterwalder, I know I'm sure you've read so many things about, and most of our listeners and participants who have read about this concept of BMC, business model canvas. It's just a strategic management tool to quickly and easily define and communicate a business idea or a concept, and especially coming this critical period of minimalism. The world now survives on less. Nobody has the time to really delve into volumes and pages of business planning. I honestly and personally feel the business model canvas is supposed to be a subset of the business plan, and it's also a generational thing. When I started my solo runs as an entrepreneur about two decades ago, back then it was all about you have to do a business plan, you have to go through the process of business plan and everything, and then it was either you are looking for funds from a financial institution, or you're asking investors, you need to give them a document. So you do make some research. I've always been saying the business plan as a document is it's not as important as the process of the planning, what you uncover in the process of planning. But coming to the modern world, the business model canvas happens to be a straightforward, as the name implies, canvas. At a glance, you capture everything. It's a one-page document that walks through the fundamental elements of businesses or a product or structuring an idea or in a coherent way. And like we all know, it has about 9 building blocks or components, which I will quickly go through. Most people are aware of this. The value proposition, you need to know what pain your business is solving, what tier is your business clearing from the faces of people. It's foundational. The value proposition is foundational to any business. You need to know, okay, people are going to exchange value for this. What are you giving? What are you relieving? What pain are you relieving for people to really exchange their funds with you? Then, of course, the second block is customer segments. You need to know who your customers are. Like I always say, if you don't know where you're going, you will never know if you don't know where you're coming from, you don't know where you're going. So customer segmentation is the practice of actually dividing your customer base into groups of individuals. Are they of certain age? Is your business gender inclined? What's the interest? What's the spending habits of the particular demography you are attending to? Like I always say again, it's just like I see customer segmentation or lack of it as waking up in the morning, going to the motor park to travel, but you don't actually know where you're going. So as a businessman, you need to know, okay, this particular product that I'm intending to solve a problem with, it's going to solve the problem of either teenagers or married women or families or corporations and so on and so forth. And the third block is what's the relationship you are going to build? That's your customer relationship. What's your relationship? How do you meet your customers? Are you meeting them in person? Are you meeting them over the phone? What are those strategies they are going to ensure that you employ to develop a relationship with your customers? Number four is the channels. The channels are defined as the avenues through which your customer now comes into contact with your business and becomes part of your sales cycle. How are they going to? Are they reaching to you via social media, like this webinar now? How did you get most of your people to sign up? Are you reaching to them through social media? Are you targeting people that are always stuck up in the very stubborn Lagos traffic on listening to radio? Are you doing meetups? Is it going to be through conferences and so on and so forth? Number five, you need to also determine your key activities. What are those activities that you're going to do? that the business is going to undertake in achieving the value proposition for the customers. What are you going to do? What are those things that you need? The time, the expertise. What action does it take you or your staff to achieve the value exchange? Could be consulting. Is it through designing? Is it through driving? Is it through even through shoveling or whatever? What are those key activities that your business is going to undertake to achieve value exchange? And number six is, of course, your key resources. You need to determine those resources that you need, your office space, your computers, the type of number of staff you're going to start with, the caliber, the quality of the staff. Do you need a car for your business? And then number seven, what are those key partners? Because most businesses rely on partnership. You have to identify, is your business going to rely on some certain kind of strategic partnership? Are you going to be doing B2B, that is business to business? How do you reach your customers? Do you need a partner? For instance, I was discussing with some colleagues yesterday regarding the business that was a startup, and we realized that we need to bring in a company that is offering global fleet management. So that's a key partner that we need to identify, and you need to identify that for your business. And then, of course, you ask yourself, if my business cannot achieve the value proposition alone, who else do I need to rely on to do it? Those are your key partners. And of course, you have to also, that's number eight, you have to determine your cost. How much does it cost to achieve your business key? How much does it cost to keep those key partnerships? What resources are you going to use? And so on and so forth. Last but not the least, revenue streams. How are you going to make money? That's the cocoa. That's where the real detail is. How do you make money? How do you convert your value proposition or solution to the cost of to the customer's problem into financial gain? How do you gain revenue? Is it pay per product? Is it fee for service? Is it per subscription? You need to determine all these things in your business model canvas. And the way Osterwald painted it in all his books and his videos, I will ask the participants to just Google Dr. Osterwalder on YouTube. He has a lot of videos on DMC. It's so interesting that you can put it on a canvas. And because it's so straightforward, so it takes away the shine of our dear old business planning that we use. But personally, I feel the business model canvas or the company, the building, the blocks in the business model canvas is supposed to be a subset in your business plan. Because in those days when we were taught about business planning, all these things that I mentioned were covered in one of the chapters on how to establish a business plan. So this is my view regarding business model canvas. I think it is a response to the minimalist world, and it's a generational thing. Most entrepreneurs of these days, of our young brothers and sisters, will prefer to have a business model canvas, and it's straightforward and it keeps you focused. Most times you develop a business plan and you put it on the shelf, or you put it somewhere, you hardly go back to it again. But when you have a business model canvas, it's straight there. You can always revisit one of the key components, one of the key building blocks. You see the interconnectivity between the revenue streams to the value proposition, to the channels, to your cost structures, to the key activities. So it's very straightforward. Thank you for the question to our colleagues.
Thank you so much for going into details about that. And I agree with you, Ibrahim, that the business model canvas, it should be like a subset of a comprehensive business plan. And one of the things I've observed from some of my colleagues in the entrepreneurship world is how the business model canvas can actually help that process of starting small. And something that help you to iterate as you grow. One of the questions right here, Mr. Abubakar Ibrahim, specifically asking, what would be your advice for a young agri-tech prospect who does not have financial muscle to fund his plans? And how would this person make financial projection, assumption, and milestone given that he does not have financial background? Which is actually one of the things with the business model canvas on how you can start small. What level can you start with, irrespective of the level of finance that you have at the moment? Asking critical questions that help you treat things a little bit. So I will still come back to that question, but first I want to see if I could bring Juliet in on something like that, on another question that might be similar to the one Mr. Abubakar asked. Juliet, are you there? Hello, Juliet. I hope the internet is back. Juliet, can you hear me? So maybe probably not. So, Mr. Ibrahim, looking at the question asked by Abubakar, and also from your own experience of how you started and also your interaction with a lot of other colleagues also that have been able to start from
zero. Yes, I'm here. Yes, I can hear you, sir.
Okay, it seems there is a delay. Yeah, Juliet, but can you hear me now? I want to be sure that there is no back and forth. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you clearly. Okay. Yes, I can hear you clearly.
That's good. So, Juliet, in multiple occasions, you've been, I like that sincerity and authenticity in your engagement with people. You've mentioned that you actually lost a lot of money when you started ERAT, in the idea of packaging odorless fufu or packaging the vitamin A gary. Are you able to share with her some of the factors that led to this? And what would be your advice for somebody like Mr. Abubakar on how to avoid maybe such pitfalls?
Okay, so basically, what actually happened was when I wanted to start ERAD, I just had the idea that, okay, I could process and package fufu. I mean, growing up, I ate a lot of fufu, especially my grandma's place and all of that. But I found out that a very little number of persons, even to this day, actually know that fufu already exists in powdered form and is completely odorless. Do you understand? And so I just felt this is a fantastic stuff that I could get involved in.
Yeah, I think the internet thing is back again. We can't hear you mentioning it. Yeah.
Right now, that was the idea I had. I did some research in area. I tried to. Oh my. Sorry. Can you hear me? I can hear you clearly. So it's funny that you can't hear me. I can hear you clearly.
Now we can hear.
Hello, can you hear me now?
It's clear now. Yeah, go ahead. But we lost you for about.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so like I said before, when I was starting ERAD, I what I had in my mind was okay. I found a new way of processing fufu into powder that will have close to 2 years shelf life, and that's absolutely fantastic compared to what you have with your regular fufu. And the fact that you can use it at any point, do you understand, and stuff, and you're not scared it's going to get spot and all, and the fact that it's completely odorless compared to your regular fufu. So that actually inspired me and made me, okay, I thought that as a very good opportunity, something I could key into and start processing and packing. Same with the gari. The normal cassava, we know they are the white cassava varieties. So when the yellow cassava variety came up, for me, I found it as something that I could use because personally, I use glasses, and that means that I can't take the regular white gari a lot. And I realized that apart from me, there are a lot of people too who are, for example, children under the age of 5, they are the people who suffer vitamin A deficiencies, and also pregnant women. These are the two major categories of people, then also those people with eye defects and stuff. So I just found that these two things are two opportunities I could key into. And for me, I felt, okay, I can start. I wrote down the things I'll be needing. I wrote down some of my processes and the things and stuff. So packaging became an issue. I knew that, okay, due to my research, I knew that these are the things that I could use. And then I tried to make inquiries. I got to the point, I just got so scared. I got a friend of mine to help me make inquiries about packaging and stuff. He made the inquiries, and I gave him the money to buy the materials and things and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I realized that that packaging material was of low quality. I had exhibitions I went to that I could not position my products. Like, I'm like, geez, how do I even start to compete with people with this kind of packaging? For months, I didn't sell. I just packed those things and kept until I found an alternative. I had to get a totally different packaging material. I had to do a total revamping of my packaging. Mind you, the products are fantastic. Those who bought them, I mean, had a lot of people who kept ordering and stuff. But you see, that packaging, sincerely, you can't leave it for a long time. The whole body will start. In fact, everything was, personally, I was ashamed of it. So until I did a total revamp, and I did a total revamp, I dumped the one I was using before. I had to invest a different amount of money in packaging. And that, you know, when you hold your products and you show somebody this product, and the person, just the packaging alone, the person's like, wow, this is beautiful. That's the first trigger to buy. Like, and so that really motivated then. I start, okay, let's keep this going. I think this is fantastic and stuff. So basically, that's the background story of the packaging thing. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you clearly. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that as well from your experience. So I want to bring in Ibrahim back on this conversation. I know you've been a very active player when it's come to high tech space in Nigeria. Just maybe taking things off from what Julia said on how packaging creates value. That having the right packaging, it's one of the things that is still missing in some of our unstructured agri sector in Nigeria. Just by adding value from the packaging aspect and all of that, that creates value, that creates some kind of differentiation. In the same way, there are a lot of opportunities still within the hard tech space. So from your own perspective, Ibrahim, what do you think is the role of technology in creating a sustainable model for agriculture in Africa? Oh, sorry, I think you are muted, Ibrahim. I'm not sure.
Sorry about that. I think that's a very interesting one question. But before I get into that, I really want to go back a little bit into what I see the question here, what Abubakar Ibrahim asks regarding a young man that's an agri-tech prospect who does not have the financial muscles to fund his plans. I think he raised a very important problem here that's been shared by most entrepreneurs, or most wannabe entrepreneurs. How will this person make financial projections, assumptions, and milestones, given the fact that he does not have any financial background? Look, if you want to go into a business, like I always tell, my background is law. I read law in the university, and I my postgraduate is in business, and I'm not a 1-2-3 person. I always tell people that I'm not a 1-2-3 person, but because of my interest in business, because a businessman must be on top of his numbers. Numbers, if you don't know numbers, if you don't know your numbers, you're definitely not going to find ways to convince investors, to convince your shareholders, to even take care of your business. So you don't have to be an expert in accounting, or you don't have to have a financial background. You can also partner. That's why we talked about key partnership as one of the building blocks in a business model canvas. It shows that, okay, you need to partner with an accountant or somebody that has very good experience in financial management to help you navigate you through the numbers so that you can make projections, you can make assumptions, you can make milestones. That's to answer Mr. Abubakar's question regarding if you don't have a background. And it's very important, because whoever is going to meet you is not going to meet your accountant. He's going to meet you as an entrepreneur. You're trying to convince that person to come on board, to invest in your business, or to buy from you. So you have to justify that by being very comfortable. I had to learn how to be very comfortable with numbers. I initially was pushing everything to accounts department or our CFO, but after going through a lot of trainings, and I realized investors do not talk to your CFO, they talk to you. You know? So like you asked, Colonel, regarding the role of technology in creating a sustainable model for agri in Africa. That's why I said in the introduction that we are living at a very, very interesting times, and we have a lot of tools. Technology is playing and will continue to play a huge role in mainstreaming agriculture in Africa. I always say this anywhere I go, and I'm so happy for our younger generations when I see my kids, and I envy their future because they are going to, their perspective of agri is completely different from what our parents and what some of us grew up with. Like you said, when you were growing up, it's about holes and stuff like that. So technology attracts and connects the future of this continent to its glorious past. The future of this continent is our kids, our younger brothers and children. And technology is going to connect them to our past. We have a lot of tech startups, like Famuela for one. I mean, Famuela is a resource material that, I mean, people now rely on to learn about you. You are organizing webinars. You are bringing information. You are democratizing things. Livestock 247, for instance. Livestock 247 is opening up, is demystifying the livestock sector through social media, through every day our staff are doing webinars. They are doing online clinics. They are on Instagram doing broadcast live. To Before then, people used to think when you say livestock, they will tell you that it's a malam's business. It's something that people from the north are into. But the role that technology is playing now is demystifying, is creating a new generation that see the livestock sector, for instance, as a big business that it is. And why are we doing that? It's because we have the tools to make it sexy and cool. So technology is going to attract the future of this continent, like I said, to its glorious past. And if you look at, forget about the crowdfunding and platforms that we have, a lot of them. We have successful ones. We have those are coming up. You can come up with, one of the projects that we're starting very soon is riceafrica.com. RiceAfrica.com is already in discussion with the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines. We are going to unleash something very, very unprecedented. Where if you see the kind of cool tech applications, crop managers, weather forecasts, you don't need to. You just put something on the soil. It tells you the soil science, the soil genetics, the plant genetics. You have a crop manager that improves your yield. You have an application that helps you do farm extension services that before you need to deploy people to villages to be enlightening people. And these extension services are simultaneously going in different local languages, the Igbo, Yoruba, Hausa. So this is the role that technology is playing. You can also bring drums, what the impact of what the drum technology is doing, how you can do site thing, how you can use GIS to do a lot of so. I am so envious of the future of this, the current generation of agri-entrepreneurs or agri-businessmen and women that we call them, because they have tools at their disposals that will make this thing very, very appealing, and the proliferation of social media platforms will also blow it into another thing. Because, I mean, a young lady like Juliet now just gave our story from Fufu. And that is so inspiring, and that is going to, you can imagine how many young men and women will be inspired by her story. And I believe she's very, very popular on social media. Sharing her story on social media will also inspire, will create a battalion of countless Africans that are going to go into this very profitable business. So technology is an indispensable tool to mainstream the entire agri sector in Africa. No doubt about it, Colonel, no doubt.
Thank you so much, Ibrahim. Thank you for going into the episode. More questions are coming. So maybe let me quickly address the attendees a little bit more on that. Please keep the questions coming, especially also if we can also keep it maybe a little bit more focused also on the conversation that we are having today. We hope to be able to have this even more often so that we can bring you know, people like Ibrahim and Juliet even more often to be able to look into different aspects. So feel free to type the questions, and we will take as many of them as possible. But I want to bring in Juliet back. So one of the key segments within the business model canvas is this idea of customer segment. And I think Ibrahim did a very good justice in explaining all of those different components. But when you look at the whole nine components, there are two of them that relate to customers. One is the customer segment, the other is the customer relations. You know, that are very important for entrepreneurs to be able to create, deliver, and capture values. But from my own experience and interaction with a lot of people within the hack space, it seems most people that I see that venture into agribusiness, whether they want to start with a little vegetable farm or they want to start with a little thing, you know, here and there, it seems I don't see people paying so much attention to that part, the customer part of this model compared to other part like key activities. You know, people say, okay, let's fertilize, get the soil and all of those things, which are important, which are key activities to deliver value. But the customer also become a very crucial part to be successful. So from your own experience, from your own understanding and interactions, how important is customer discovery and acquisition to the development of a profitable agribusiness?
Okay, thank you very much, sir, for that question. So the thing is, one thing, I hope everyone can hear me.
We can hear you clearly now.
Okay, so one thing a lot of people, especially those in primary production, that's production, like planting of crops and also rearing of animals, one of the basic problems is that they don't look at whom they want to serve first before they venture into those things. Like you want to grow vegetables, who are your target audience? Most times is when they are done planting and these crops are ready to be harvested, that's when you start thinking, so how am I supposed to sell these things and stuff? Then they start running helter-skelter to get on a bokiman in the market where they're going to supply their cucumbers to, or to get on the food processor that they will go and give their cassavas to, so that it will not deteriorate within 48 hours and stuff, or 72 hours. So who your customer is actually very important. Who your customer is very, you need to be clear on whom you want to supply. Now, for example, if your target audience, your target market is actually families within your community, that will give you an information on even the scale of your farm, like the scale in which you want to venture into, like the size of your farm, or the number of cucumbers and cabbage, or the rotation pattern of these things. Do you understand? It will inform you. For example, if you're doing a subscription based, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, I can hear you, sir.
We can hear
Hello?
You.
Hello, we can hear you.
Julius, go ahead. We can hear you.
Okay, so for example, if you're a vegetable farmer, now when I mean vegetable, I don't just mean leafy vegetable, and your target is, okay, I want to grow tomato, pepper, onion, and some of the regular vegetables you use in cooking, and your target market is your immediate community. Now, because people need these vegetables in portion, you could decide to do like a subscription-based package for them. So you get people who will pay you upfront, and what you do is every week, on a weekly basis, you pick these vegetables like your tomato, pepper, in different portions and different cages, supply them like a package and supply to the families. Now, if you had put that in perspective, whom your customer is in perspective, then it will help you to plan well on how you want to do some of these subscription-based sales and things like that. So customer, who your customer is or the market you want to serve is really very important. It's very, very important when you are starting up an agricultural venture. It's very, very, it's just like every other business. It's very important. So regardless of the scale of your production, regardless of that, think first of all of your customer before you even venture into what you want to do. So basically, I hope that addresses this well. It addresses this customer aspect.
Yes, very well, sir. Thank you so much, Juliet. And since we are talking about value creations and profitable agribusiness in general, the idea of customers' discovery in itself and acquisition is actually one of the areas that still remain that still have so much potential in the hack space. And also it's one of the areas that I believe technology could have a very big role to play in terms of unleashing the values within our hack space. So thank you so much for alluding to that. I want to bring in Ibrahim back. You are one of the major players in the livestock space in Nigeria. And I've also learned about your interest in the rice and whatever. Could you maybe, I know you touched a little bit on this earlier on, but could you go a little bit more into detail in terms of the opportunities that still remains on tap within this value chain specifically? I don't know whether there are specific other things that you might be able to share with us today before we move into other questions.
Okay, thank you, Doc. Before I get into that, let me just add the perspective, a different perspective to what Juliet said. I think to add to what she said, we as business persons, we need to also design strategies, not just only on how to attract customers, because most entrepreneurs, like you rightly said, and like I mentioned earlier on, it's just like going to the motor park, not knowing where you're traveling to. And you're leaving your house already, you're packing your bags, you're at the motor park, but you don't actually know your destination. I think that is virtually suicide, financial suicide or time wastage. You also need to know that it's not just about attracting the customer. You need to have a strategy on how to maintain and retain those customers. All businesses survive on acquiring not only new customers, but retaining all customers. That's what we call repeat sales. If you keep on assuming your business relies on getting 100 customers every month, and you are so happy that you've captured 100 customers in March, and in April you also discover that you've captured 100 customers. On the surface of it, you'll be happy, not knowing that maybe you are losing 50 customers. You've lost 50 customers from February, so you are coming into March with 50 from February. You are adding 100. That's 150. Instead of to make it 200, and then in March and so on and so forth. So you need to come up with strategies of not only attracting, but maintaining and retaining your customers. And there's one thing that I also want to share with the participants here. The concept of AIDA. It's called, I don't know if Doc has come across AIDA, A-I-D-A. I mean, customers, first of all, when you come up with your product, they have to be attracted. The strategy that you use to attract your customer is different from when they are interested. When they are attracted to your brand, your product, then they will develop interest. The strategy that you use when they've developed interest is different. It's where after they've developed interest now that they will make a demand. That is when the value proposition is being extended. They are now buying. You can lose that customer in between attraction. You can attract the customer, but you lose them before they get interested due to customer relationship, customer management, accessibility to your product or your brand. And then you can also lose that customer between being interested and making that demand. They are interested. Before they make, can you hear me, Doc? Hello, Doc.
Yeah, we can hear you clearly. Go ahead, please.
We can hear you, sir.
Okay, excellent. So you can lose that customer between being interested and making a demand. And after the demand, then they will accept. Acceptance is when they now exchange value, pay, either it's payment, subscription, or whatever, to accept your brand. So that AIDA concept must be implemented. If you don't know how to maintain the relationship in between AIDA, it's not just about attracting them. They don't make a demand or they don't accept your product. So now back to your question regarding opportunities in the livestock sector. You know, Doug, I'm very passionate about the livestock sector, and I don't know how to reduce my passion for it, because I see it as a sector that has been downplayed. Whenever people are talking about agriculture in Nigeria, we tend to be so much crop-based. There's crop bias when you're talking about agriculture. While the livestock sector, as part and parcel of the agri sector, it's equally massive in terms of opportunity. And I tell you why. There's so much stereotyping. There's so much myth. There's so much misunderstanding. There's so much deliberate apathy and contempt both ways. And there's so much arrogance on both sides from the practitioners and people. And some people are equally trying to hold on to it, not open up to it, so that you don't even understand the real cocoa. But I'll tell you, Nigeria accounts for over 43% of the livestock. This is according to a UNFAO survey of 2013. 43% of the livestock population of West Africa is in our country. And if you take the National Agricultural Survey released by the Ministry of Agri in 2016, which was based on the animal survey of 2011, they said that Nigeria has 19.5 million cattle, 41.5 million sheep, and 72.5 million goats. Even if that is not even scientific, because we believe it is highly, this is a conservative estimate, because the last time that Nigeria made any semblance of an animal survey was in 1991. So since 1991, we've just been estimating. But interestingly, the International Livestock Research Institute, ILRI, said that 95% of the national herd, let's assume is the 19.541, what was released by the Ministry of Agri. 95% of that is under pastoralist and smallholder management. What we mean by pastoralist, the typical nomadic pastoralist that goes around grazing, and that's now become a source of national tension in our country. 95% of our national herd is under pastoralist management. And for most people that don't know, most of our nomadic pastoralists, ownership of cattle to them is ornamental. It's not commercial. It's basically ornamental. So only 5% of what you see are under ranches and feedlots. And that just tells you a lot. That says that there's a justification for mainstreaming of the livestock sector. We need to have a lot of people investing into that, because most of the things we consume in this country are actually imported. IRI also stated something that I want to emphasize here. International Livestock Research Institute also stated that the demand for beef, for instance, in developing countries, which Nigeria is a developing country, will reach 250 million metric tons in the year 2030. That's 10 years from now. Nigeria is a developing country with a growing population estimated to be 450 million by 2050, according to the World Population Review. And we are also surrounded by developing countries. Let me tell you something what most people don't know. Most of the traffic you see in Lagos, of the cows that have been slaughtered in Lagos, that is adjusted to be between 6,000 to 8,000, depending on which statistic you're taking. It's basically 30 to 40% of them are imported. We have imports from Central Africa, from South Sudan, from Niger, from Cameroon, as far as we trace cattle routes from Morocco, coming down to Mauritania, coming down to Mali, to the Sahelian route into northern Nigeria, down to Lagos. So if Nigeria is surrounded by developing countries, and it is stated that beef consumption is going to snowball into 250 million metric tons in 2030, it means our surrounding neighbors that are now feeding us, will also have a spike in their consumption, will have a spike in their demand. So it means we are going to have less. Assuming our national herd is not under, even if you don't believe that 95% is under pastoralist management, assuming all is well, in Nigeria today, the northeastern part of Nigeria has been under extremism and insurgency for the past 10 years. We all know about that. The northwest currently is engulfed in a very massive rural banditry. The north central is an area of farmer herder crisis. So for the past couple of years, as experts, we've noticed a steady rise in demand and a decline in supply, because people cannot do feedlots. People cannot have access to their ranches. And the few ones that are under the pastoralist management are being attacked by bandits and people that and rustlers. So when it's basic economic knowledge. When you have high demand, as in our population going to be 450, and low supply, it gives you what? Recipe for disaster. Let me ask you something. Beef consumption in Nigeria is predicted to grow rapidly from about 360,000 tons per annum to 1.3 million metric tons, to 1.3 million tons by 2050. And like I said, over 30% are imported. Lagos, Nigeria has the largest livestock market in terms of consumption in sub-Saharan Africa. Lagos slaughters an estimated 6,000 cows a day. We got this from the Ministry of Agri in Lagos far back in 2017. And we don't believe it's even scientific, because there are a lot of abattoirs that are not even under management by the Lagos government. There are those that are operated by religious organizations, military establishment, and so on and so forth. This slaughter rate in Lagos alone, assumed to be conservative, equals to about 180,000 cows a month with a total value of 27 billion naira, Dr. Colonius. This is in Lagos alone. Cow is not just about beef. There's also milk there. And I always tell people, if we all eat milk and we drink milk, we eat meat and we drink, why can't we all produce meat and produce milk? Domestic annual milk production in Nigeria is only about 400 million liters now. And this is resulting to a supply gap of about 700 million liters. To fill this gap, Nigeria spends large amount of its scarce foreign resource to import livestock products with an average of $480.6 million. That's about over 173 billion is being spent on milk imports alone per year. And is this not an opportunity for us to get into this? And that is what moves us. That is what motivates us to roll out our platform like Livestock 247. And back to the issue of models, we should also know that one of the things that technology is giving most agtech companies is not just, I want our participants to understand the difference between a linear product and a platform-based product. Most companies survive on linear products. I produce pure water. I sell pure water. That, the longevity of that company is short-lived, because linear-based businesses have been overtaken by platform-based businesses. If you look at the Facebooks of this world, the Googles, the Apples, the Amazon, they're all platform-based businesses. And what I always tell people is, instead of designing your business as a linear-based business, I'm just selling gari, or I'm selling milk, or I'm selling mango, or I'm selling meat. No, convert your model into a platform-based model so that you bring all stakeholders and you do what we call, you encourage valuable interactions amongst the stakeholders on your platform, and then you monetize the interactions on your platform. So you are not only relying on production like we are now in Livestock 247. We don't only rely on trading, selling cows. No, we rely on offering on an online clinic to cattle owners in rural areas. We also rely on offering fintech services. People that cannot reach livestock markets with cash, they can now go through us. We also bring in transportation and so on and so forth. So that's the beauty of technology, and that's the beauty of the platform-based model. But by and large, there are tremendous opportunities in the agri sector. I just gave you one, which is the livestock sector. And I believe what I know is just a figment of a lot of people's imagination. If you go in there, last year we did a survey on two routes, how many trucks of cows pass down to the south. In a week, we calculated 1,458 trucks. And a truck of a cows, it's averagely between 30 to 33 cows per truck. That's close to about 40-something thousand cows in 1 week going down to the south. And, I mean, numbers don't lie. The rest is yours. Thank you, Colonis.
Thank you so much, Ibrahim. Really, really appreciate that. I might still have to bring you back, because there's a lot of questions here that still even inch on even your response just now. One of the questions is asked by me. I don't know whether this is a male or female, but again, whoever. It was asking the question that how can livestock production align with sustainable goals, especially in Nigeria? He also went further to ask about how come no powder milk production in Nigeria? I'm not sure that what is the challenge. I don't know whether this is something also you can get into. But in terms of, thank you for the detailed answers, especially in terms of the opportunities in the livestock. But I don't know whether you could allude a little bit to this question on aligning with sustainable goals. What are your thoughts on even how that can actually even become more opportunities or create more opportunities through which youth or anyone can plug into in the livestock sector?
Is that question directed to me, Doctor? Am I supposed to respond?
Yes, please, Ibrahim.
Okay. I love the perspective that the guy is trying to bring. How do we align livestock production with sustainable growth? In fact, I was a couple of months ago, I was invited by some developmental organization in one of these East African countries. And the discussion was around our platform. And when you look into the SDG goals of the United Nations, I tell you, our business model has solved about 8 out of those sustainable development goals. But let me just shoot straight. For instance, what we're trying to do is the whole objective of Livestock 247 as a platform is the mitigation of animal to human disease transmission, what is called zoonosis. And I don't know if people know that COVID-19 is also zoonotic. I mean, it's something that zoonotic disease is a disease that comes from animals and it affects humans, tuberculosis, brucellosis, and so on and so forth. So one of the objectives of Livestock 247 is to make sure that Nigerians consume fit for slaughter and traceable livestock in order to bring down our statistics, our very disturbing numbers in terms of animal disease transmission. I stumbled on a report released by the London School of Public Health and the Hanoi Institute of Public Health about the top 4 countries globally on the scale of animal to human disease transmission. Nigeria came second. It will surprise a lot of people. Ethiopia is number 1, Nigeria is 2, India is 3, and then Tanzania is 4. And that's quite troubling. And it will not even disturb you until you know that 3 out of 5 new diseases discovered every year are zoonotic, animal to human. Over 70% of infectious diseases of humans is animal related. Like I said, COVID-19 is one of them. Most people don't know what they eat. They don't know where it's coming from. I mean, most women go through abortion, unnecessary abortion, without knowing that it has some connection to brucellosis, which is an animal disease that's infecting butchers, then women, because they are the most vulnerable. When you buy raw meat, they are the ones that prepare the meat and so on and so forth. This has stopped that. When I keep on talking, people will even stop eating meat, which I don't want that to happen for now. So that's one. We are helping, in one of the SDGs is health. We are also helping rural women. With Livestock 247 today, I'm not marketing our platform. With Livestock 247 today, we have rural women, a rural woman in Delta State that's growing a few of her goats, or one in Katsina, or one in Borno, can now sell without middlemen directly. In fact, we just signed an agreement. We just signed a contract with funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just a couple of weeks ago that is going to keep us, going to give us access to 15,000 households with 75,000 livestock across 5 states in Nigeria. Livestock 247 is going to give them animal health services to make sure that Nigerians eventually consume fit for slaughter and traceable livestock. That is just one. By doing that, we are empowering rural communities. We are opening up more opportunities for them. That's entrepreneurship now and empowerment. It is one of the SDGs. We are also now making access to market easy. Before now, most rural livestock owners have been duped by because it's a credit-based business. Agents go to the villages, park their cows on credit, and take it to the market sale. But this time around, we are connecting off-takers in Lagos or in Port Harcourt or in the south with livestock merchants and livestock owners. This is another goal of the NDG. And I can go on and on and on. Girl child empowerment. We have so much bias in helping the pastoralist female that normally milks the cow and takes it to the market. This is the product that the Bill and Melinda Gates fund that I was telling you about that's funded. That we want to empower. We're going to do AI. We're going to give them new breeds of cows that will be producing more milk so that they'll be having more yield. Not just giving them milk, we're attaching them to off-takers of those milk products based on those statistics that I gave you that there are so much wastage. So these are some of the things that we're doing, and I believe it aligns 100% sustainable development goals, and that's why with all sense of modesty that we've been celebrated around the world and we've been invited. We recently met members of the Livestock Data for the Decision. We invited us to Rome
And it is a UN thing, and we were all celebrated. And Livestock 247 was the only private organization from sub-Saharan Africa to attend that kind of an event. So it's because what we are doing is aligning with the Sustainable Development Goals, but we can only do more. We can't do all. That's why we are calling in for more people to participate in the sector, and so that we can have more participants and we can blow this thing up and to where it's supposed to be. Thank you.
Well, Ibrahim, before you go, I see I have a question. But before then, Juliet, you might be, I would love to bring you in next. And the question I'll be asking you will focus more on the severe and relevant pain that remain unaddressed. But before then, there is a question here that I'm guessing maybe Mr. Ogene really wants answer to in terms of the question on the challenges in the powder milk production. I don't know if Ibrahim, if you have one or two ideas to be able to share in that area. It's of the, that most of the powder milk right now are imported. That what are the challenges? I'm not sure whether it's something you want to address to before I bring in Juliet for our response on the idea of the severe and relevant pains that remain unaddressed.
Okay, regarding the milk issue, what I said was domestic milk production in Nigeria is only about 400 million liters. And we have a supply gap of about 700 million liters. I said that specifically to highlight the opportunity in that sector. And I said that Nigeria spends a large amount of its scarce foreign resource to import livestock products. We spend about 173 billion annually to import. And back to his question, the issue with milk production is it has to do with production. And I met a submission at a conference in Abuja some times back, and I brought an example of what Mahatma Gandhi did in India in the late around the 40s, 50s, around there about. So there was this policy then of an Indian child having access to at least a liter of milk per day or per week or somehow like that. The whole problem of production of especially dairy in Nigeria has to do with uptake. The cost of production is very high. Averagely now, for you to produce a liter, it's going to cost you about 380 naira, 400 naira, thereabout. And the uptake price that most of these, the Friesland companies and all these uptakers, the structured uptakers, the ALAs, what they buy from the rural milk producer, it's about, I think the going rate is about 120, 250 naira. So you're making a loss. And I mean, businesses, you're not running a charity. You produce something at 380 and you are selling it at 120. It doesn't make sense. So that's why most pastoralist women, they prefer to take their milk as infra, the no-no, to the neighboring market to sell. And at the end of the day, there's so much waste because you can't just buy all the milk. So it's wasted. What we've been calling for government to do is what we call guaranteed offtake. Let me give you an instance, Doc. Assuming now the federal government will say, each public school attending child in Nigeria is going to be given 1 liter of milk every day or every week. Let's just say every week because we don't have money in the country. So let's say every week. You can imagine how many liters of milk we are going to be given. And then the federal government will say, okay, we are going to be off-taking a liter, let's say at 500 naira or 450 naira. And they will establish milk parlors everywhere, whereby you bring your milk, it has to meet a certain categorization. There are experts that will check to make sure that the milk has proper nutrients and everything, and then there's a milk pallet. In those days, when we were growing up, around the Benue Plateau axis, it used to be like that. We get fresh milk, and I mean, almost every day. But government policies have changed. If the government will now implement a guaranteed offtake, I'm telling you, everybody will get a cow in his backyard so that you'll be milking, even if you're producing 10 liters a day. You have a milk pallet that you can go and sell. So the problem is offtake. Without an offtake, and this is not just about milk. It goes across all the value chain. It goes across rice, and that's why they are doing the anchor borrower scheme and all this. If there's a guaranteed offtake, I'm telling you, production is a no-brainer. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ibrahim. I would love to bring Juliet in here. I think Ibrahim just identified one of the major challenges that still remain unaddressed. But I'm also sure that you will have a number of other things also that you are thinking. In terms of areas of severe and relevant pains that remain unaddressed along most of the agricultural value chain in Nigeria, specifically, and which might also be the case all across Africa. Are there specific ones that you could maybe share a little bit in terms of areas whereby we still really don't have solution, there are still so much challenges, or whether we don't have enough solutions, or people providing solutions in those areas? Juliet.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much, sir, for that. So two things for me, two very important things. One, access to market, and two, value addition processing. Like I said before, there's a lot we do in Nigeria. We do a lot of primary production. Now, Nigeria is one of the highest producers of tomatoes. Still, we import a lot of tomatoes too. We're still part of the highest importers of tomatoes. Now, the reason for that is basically processing. Because tomato is very, very fresh, and that cuts across a lot of vegetables and fresh produce, and even cassava itself. But at least reasonably around cassava, in as much as there is waste, is not as much as vegetables, because we have a lot of processing centers around. At least in Ibadan, we have a reasonable, like a lot of processing centers reasonably. Might not be much as we need, but reasonably for cassava here, it's reasonable. But you see, for every other vegetable, one, there is another thing apart from the two things I mentioned, which is processing and market. Storage facility is almost zero in Nigeria. It's almost zero. Because imagine that we have this problem. When crops are in their season, they are most time extremely cheap and they go to waste. Off seasons, you almost do not get these crops, or they are really very expensive. Now, we don't have to keep alternating between these things. That's why I said anybody who is going into agriculture reasonably doesn't even need to go into primary production. There are a lot of gaps within storage facilities, market, and also processing. Now, processing, let's take tree crops, for example, using mango. Mango, for example, as a very important a very important crop. Now, a friend of mine recently did a study of how much mango waste in Benue. Like, he practically went to the market to ask people. Now, another thing was because of the coronavirus lockdown, they had the waste doubled. Do you understand? Because you have a lot of mangoes, but they are just there wasting away. Like, nobody is buying anything. Half of everything harvested goes to waste and things like that. So processing, value addition in terms of processing these things to finish products, they are one of the very serious challenges we have. Another thing is also access to market. Now, it's funny that I've seen a lot of people, especially in the online space, develop online markets and stuff for them, for farmers. But most times, that linkage is always not, is still missing, kind of. The linkage between farmers to, to off-takers is missing. One, the problem is basically also from the part of the farmers. On the part of the farmers, because how do you produce things and you don't have an existing market? But now, because more than 80% of the food we produce in Nigeria are produced by rural women who don't even understand, rural dwellers and smallholder farmers who really do not even know how to leverage technology, that gap still exists. So we need people who really go down to the villages and be sincere with them and create markets for them. Because one thing I understand about rural people is this: if you go there to meet them and you want to provide a solution, somewhere in their head, they're always thinking, okay, the federal government intervention, and if you make a mistake and you feel you want to dupe them or stuff, after one cycle, the next cycle, they won't want to do business with you again. They won't want you to help them again because they believe you're there to rip them off. That's also a problem. So then another thing we need to look at is storage facilities. We lack a lot of storage facilities. Like there are so many products that actually go to waste due to these things. Imagine in major markets, there are storage facilities like where they can actually preserve some of these fresh produce that have to go fresh. Because truth be told, there are people who will never take pasta tomatoes, no matter how wonderful it is. They will prefer to take their vegetables fresh. So that means there is a market for fresh produce. Like this produce has to be in its fresh form. And so you can supply to people and stuff. And that's why storage facility is very important. If you have cold rooms around places where, okay, people can invest in cold rooms and they are reasonably priced because of electricity and because everybody is into business to make profit. It is only if most of this cold room will come in form of maybe social enterprises where people who own those cold rooms are trying to seek funding and other stuff. Do you understand? That's the way it's going to. But if you want it to be profit oriented and stuff like that, electricity might be an issue. It is only if those guys have a way of funding and stuff and all of that then. But storage, market, and also processing, there are three very important things we need to look at. Then another thing is also logistics too. Logistics, if you know how much produce go to waste just by the damage they incur when they are being transported from farm to the market, you will know that there is need for logistic systems that can suit different crops very well. There is need for that. Yeah. So basically, at least these four things, I think they are areas that really have a lot of gap and people can actually key into them to provide solutions. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Juliet. There are so many questions there, and I think we have about 6 minutes left in our timeline. One of the things I'm going to do is to collate some of the questions and make them available to Ibrahim and Juliet so that they could actually address some of those. But I want to maybe provide some kind of a guidelines maybe that might be able to address some of the questions right here. Thank you, Juliet, for sharing those four major areas that still remain gap, that still remain unaddressed within our agricultural value chain. So the idea of access to markets, the idea of processing, the storage facility and logistics. Oftentimes, most people ask questions, for instance, there is a question right here in terms of how, what are the government assistance in terms of all of this. Why there is a lot that government needs to do in order to help revamp our value chains and also contribute to that. I also believe that there is a lot that a privately led driven initiatives can still do within this. Because solving these problems creates value, and anywhere that value is being served, that value is being created, business is better. So, but there is need to have that business minded, to have that business mindset in designing solutions to these areas. Let's give an example. Let's talk about that tomato. There is a lot of value that can be in terms of you creating a customers, a number of people in one location. Don't try to do so many things. Maybe it's just be one city and create a customers base that, and also a network of farmers that supply those things. One of the challenges I've seen is so many people want to do big stuff and start big. Every big thing starts small. But in order for your business idea to be profitable and to be viable, it's important to think through each of those steps as highlighted by Ibrahim earlier today. whether it's in terms of what are the key partners that you need to have for your business idea to make sense, or whether are the key activities that need to occur that for you to create the value, what are the resources you need. And that resources will depend now. A lot of time, that resources is not financial resources. A lot of time, there are ways whereby you can leverage on non-financial resources that are available to you. This might require a lot of innovation, a lot of thinking through. You also want to talk about what are the customer relationships that need to occur. What are the channel? What are the so it's all about having this business mindset, which is very crucial. So that we change this concept of looking at agriculture as a social venture, rather than and begin to bring the business mindset. And I think the example of what Ibrahim is doing with livestock 247, another thing that he's into, becomes an example, and that could be an inspiration for so many. Some similar challenges still remain unaddressed in our poultry business. It still remain unaddressed in even goat business within a certain locality. So there are so many severe pains and relevant pains that remain unaddressed within this sector. But there is need to bring that business mindset to address them. And I hope for us to really create more engagement like this to provide the education, the support, and the tools that can actually help individual agricultural entrepreneurs to be successful. And we hope to do this more, whether it's through program like this, whether it's through some of the tools that we are going to be launching in times to come. But one critical area that we are addressing this is through what we call the Agribusiness Masterclass. So I want to use the opportunity also to share that with people that might be on the webinar today. Later this year, we're going to be launching that Agribusiness Masterclass. The idea of the masterclass is to have a structured educational tool that actually walks you through all the different components of what needs to be in place to design a profitable agribusiness. Whether that's coming through mentorship, whether that's coming through learning from case studies of businesses, whether that is coming through having access to tools and other things that actually help you, or having access to the network of people through which you can actually have collaborations that are essential for your agribusiness to be successful. We're going to be talking more in depth about the Agribusiness Masterclass in our next webinar that will be coming up next month. At the moment right now, we have, I think as of today, we have about 15 CEOs of different companies that are actually contributing to that. We have people also from multiple countries, from the US, from Europe, that are contributing different aspects. We also have about 30 farmers in Nigeria, farmers that are bringing relevant practical education and experiences within this masterclass as well. Our goal is to use it to be able to drive the kind of education and the kind of training and opportunity that is very essential to change this concept of the social venture thinking of agriculture and begin to take agriculture as a business and think through all the different components that need to be in place to make it a profitable venture for anyone that wants to go into it. Before we close today, I want to once again recognize my members of the panel for all that they've done today. We really, really appreciate you for not holding back, for sharing from your experience, from sharing from your ideas. But I would love to have maybe like a closing remarks for each of our members of the panel. And also, see also if I could also bring Professor Kende in. I don't know also if the VC is still there. I know he has to be in another meeting urgently. That's great. I'm so excited.
I had the submissions from the two panelists, so I couldn't just leave.
Thank you so much, sir. So we're really going to bring you in for the closing remarks. But Juliet, I don't know if you have a closing remarks to give. And then Mr. Ibrahim can also give like a closing remark. And then we bring our father, Professor Pupola, to also give us like a closing remarks. Juliet, do you have any closing remarks you'd like to share?
Okay. Yes, I want to say a very big Thank you to Dr. Collines. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I have to say this, it might be funny, but I had this cold feet, do you understand? When I got the invite, and so I really do not take this opportunity for granted. Then I also learned a lot from Mr. Ibrahim. My God, his depth is on another level. I'm so super excited. This is just very fantastic for me. In as much as it feels like I'm on the panel, I just felt like a student and I'm learning, I'm following religiously. I think he's doing amazing stuff. Having more than 2 decades experience in the industry is no jokes. Like, it's no brainer and stuff. I'm really so excited to be a part of this. Then I want to say a very big thank you to the two profs around. The fact that you're here is just everything. I'm grateful that you at least found me worthy to listen to. I'm really excited about that, and I'm really humbled, and I'm encouraged by your presence. Then for every single participant who's here, I want to say thank you to you guys too for sparing time to listen to all we have to say. I personally do not take it for granted, and I'm grateful, in fact, for the platform. Thank you, Dr. Collines, for setting this up to help African agripreneurs and agri-enthusiasts. Thank you so much for all you're doing, and I believe this will build further partnership and stuff between us and even Mr. Ibrahim. Yeah, thank you very much for everything. I'm super grateful.
Thank you. I would love to bring Ibrahim for his closing remark before I bring Professor Kanyede as well, who have been silently listening to here. Without the support of Professor Kanyede, I don't think we're going to have this webinar. So I'm sure I'm going to bring it in after Ibrahim's closing remark.
First of all, Doc, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, the platform, and to be in the presence of the Prof and Juliet, who have learned so much. Like I said in the beginning, my prayer is to make my today better than my yesterday and my tomorrow better than my today. And we always learn and look forward to learning more. I've learned so much from your story, Juliet. It's so inspiring, and I'm looking forward for more collaboration. And to all the participants that have listened, I want to specifically single out Dr. Collines for what you're doing for Africa, and especially for the invitation to join the faculty of the Agri Masterclass powered by George Washington from Washington State University, and all that you're doing. And I also want to tell our participants here that Agri Masterclass is going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to learning as well as contributing to that masterclass. And I will close by saying something that I've learned a long time ago. Attending seminars, webinars, or reading books or whatever. A great man once said something about 1,400 and something years ago that you can go and learn whatever you want to learn. Go and read whatever you want to read. Mommy, if you don't put it into practice, God will not put his blessing into it.
Mm.
So we should know the difference between learning and being practical. Africa needs us today. Each and every one of us, we have to change the narrative of our continent. We have to inspire each other. We don't need people to inspire us from somewhere. We need to inspire each other. We have a lot. Africa is the next frontier. I tell it everywhere. If you've missed out on what Africa is going to unleash in the next 10, 20 years, you've missed out big time. And being Africans within Africa, we need to drive this change. And I'm confident, and I'm hopeful, and I'm very, very sure people like Dr. Collines and the professor and bring them with platforms like this. The sky is not even our limit. I mean, it's our starting point. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I would love to bring Professor Kanyede Hain. Is the provost of the Faculty of Agriculture, the Dean of the Faculty of Agriculture in Oshun State University. Without his support, I don't think we're going to have this webinar. He has been a father. He has been. I really appreciate your support, sir. Professor Kanyede, please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Collines. Let me thank the the main speakers are Ibrahim and Juliet. The conversation, the presentation was very, very great and exciting. Let me appreciate my vice chancellor who has hung on in spite of so many other commitments, is still as out there. And to thank him also for commissioning me to champion this collaboration on behalf of the university. Yeah, the panelists have clearly outlined that agriculture still remains a gold mine and the way to go. And I think what keeps recurring is that agriculture is a business. And is that time we stopped looking at it as one social venture or any development project? It's a real business. And I'd like to close by saying that at the planning stage, since agriculture is a business, we should look for that least cost model. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that when we are making projection, our costs should be conservative, the minimum, and the revenue projection should be realistic, so that we don't have a very wrong impression of profits at the onset of, at the planning stage. I thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Colinius.
Thank you so much, Prof. We really, really appreciate that. I would love to bring our Father Hind in turn for the closing remark. I don't know if there's any other way for me to really talk about the sacrifice that he actually made to be in this very particular meeting. I'm aware about other places that he's supposed to be right now. So thank you so much, sir. For the close mic. Please, you can come in, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm so excited about what we have been through today. Ibrahim, a lawyer, encroaching in many territories. He's into finance, he's into agriculture, he's into marketing, just everything. Okay, I hope that doesn't have legal implications. Because you, I cannot practice as I can practice as a lawyer because I'm not one. But you are into everything. Juliet, I don't know what Juliet studied, but she's now into fufu and garri production. The lessons are very clear. You are your own limitation. And I'm talking to the youth. You can only be your own limitation. Whatever you study, it's up to you to make sense out of it. Look at your environment. See what you can make. See how you can impact your environment. See how you can make livelihood for yourself. This is what these two guys have done. I don't know what else they have done in the past, but they have decided to take on some ventures that probably are related to their training, and they have made a success of it. So my admonition out there, particularly to the youth, is that let yourself loose. Shed the toga of arrogance. Stop complaining. There is so much to be achieved. There is so much that can be done. It's up to you. You have yourself to beat. So I want to appreciate everybody that has been on this panel this morning, and to especially also appreciate Colenius for his patriotic gusto. I wish we have so many Nigerians offshore doing this. What we read on the social media is everybody condemning Nigeria. Nothing good happens in Nigeria to them. We keep on comparing Nigeria with Ghana, Rwanda. These are midgets. Nigeria is a big country, a great country, a fantastic country to live and work in. So I wish all of you a very good weekend. Thank you very much for this enterprise. Good morning again.
Thank you so much, Hag, Thank you, sir. For being our father, for guiding us even through all of this. We really, really appreciate you, sir. For those that have been asking questions of how to connect with members of the panelists in one way or the other, just send email to cornelius@famwella.com or cornelius.adewale@wsu.com. I'm going to put the email in the chat right now. I will be happy to make any connection that might be needed. But I also want to be able to protect the members of the panel. so that they don't just get inundated by unnecessary things and things like that. That's why I want to be that middle ground in between. So once again, I really, 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 really appreciate everybody here. Thank you for being here, for honoring us with your time. I know that there are so many places you can be right here today, but you choose to be here. So we really, really appreciate you for being here. We're going to have another webinar. We're going to be having it every last Friday of every month. But we'll probably change the time to 4 p.m. Nigerian time for subsequent ones because there are other people also that I want to bring in that are in other time zones. The time that we have right now does not allow me to be able to bring people from the U.S., from Europe, or from other people on the panel because it's like 2 a.m. right here today. So we might be able to change the time. But for everybody that are here and people that are registered, expect email with the details of the recordings of this this particular webinar and any other information that are relevant to the Agribusiness Masterclass as well. Once again, thank you all. We really appreciate you for honoring us with your time. God bless you all.
Oh, sorry. Yes.